Jen Blair and Jamie Sherman join me this week to discuss the Craft Malt Guild. This is Beersmith Podcast number 186.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 186, and it's late January 2019. This week, Jen Blair and Jamie Sherman join me to discuss the Craft Malt Guild. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top craft brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's the podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at beerandbrewing.com/podcasts. And also the Riptide Pump from Blickman Engineering. Designed for homebrewers, this pump features a whisper quiet sealed housing, a removable tri-clamp stainless steel head that's easy to clean, and a built-in relief valve for easy priming. It also has the integral Blickman linear flow valve for precise flow control. Get the Riptide Pump today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith 3 is available now for download, and also the mobile version's out. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider recipe support to the Beersmith platform, along with new integrated water profile and mash pH tools. Dozens of new features, including cloud folders, updated databases, support for fruit juice and honey, as well as new Whirlpool hop options. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Jen Blair and Jamie Sherman. Dr. Jamie Sherman has been the barley breeder at Montana State University since 2015. She also oversees the newly created Malt Quality Lab at MSU. Jen Blair is executive director of the North American Craft Maltsters Guild and member of the AHA Governing Committee. She's also an advanced Cicerone and a certified beer judge. It's great to have you guys both on the show. Jamie, welcome.
Thank you. Great, thanks. We look forward to talking to you.
And Jen, great to have you as well.
Yeah, thank you for having us today.
So we're here to talk about the craft malting industry and the upcoming craft malting conference. But Jen, I wanted to start and ask you about the term, the craft malting industry, and also what's really meant by the term craft malting.
Sure. So the term craft malting is a little bit different from the traditional commodity, larger industrial malt houses. So when we say craft malting, what we mean is it's typically our craft maltsters are going to be using a majority of their grain sourced locally. And for us, locally is defined typically as within 500 miles of their malt house. It also means that we our maltsters are growing, or pardon me, malting somewhere between 5 to 10,000 tons annually. That's a very big difference from what a larger scale malt house does. And again, they're also using at least 50% of their grain grown within a 500 mile region or so of their malt house. And actually, a lot of our maltsters are using grain grown within, I would say, 300, 200 miles of their malt house. So it's very, very regional. Some of them actually grow all of the grain on their own family farms or within 30 miles of their malt house. And then we also ask that they don't have more of a 24% ownership by another non-craft malt house, just to make sure that we're keeping them smaller, independent, really embracing that ideology of what craft means.
So, I mean, is it kind of analogous to craft beer brewing, or the smaller beer brewers, for example?
Correct. It's very much in that same spirit.
Yeah. And how's that, how's it different? If I went in a malt house, I assume they're malting the grain there. How is it different from a large malt house? How would a small one be different?
There are quite a few differences. One of the biggest ones, of course, is just the scale. Many of our members make around 85 tons of malt annually. The average is usually around 250 tons per year. that's for a craft maltster. And when you go into an industrial malt house, they are doing that amount in one of their grain beds, and they have four of those in the room. So I've actually been in an industrial malt house before with a craft maltster who saw just one of these germ beds that they're going through, and she laughed and said, "This is more, this one in a room of four just like it." She said, "This one is probably double what I do every year." So the scale is one of the biggest things. Another one of the bigger things is just the variety of barley that the craft maltsters are using. A lot of the malt houses are developing in areas that haven't historically been traditional malting barley areas. So they're looking for different varieties to use, different methods to use them. And then, of course, just the diverse methods. We do have floor maltsters, as well as maltsters using pneumatic malting equipment and combinations of the two. And then most of them are small businesses, very small businesses, where it's family farms who have diversified into running a craft malt house, or it's second careers for some people. For a lot of people, they started as brewers or home brewers and saw that there was this huge gap in their market for locally grown grains. So that's really the biggest differences between what you would see with a traditional, a larger, more industrial malt house and a craft malt house.
And Jen, I understand you're also the executive director of the Craft Maltsters Guild. What is the guild, and what does it do?
So the Craft Maltsters Guild is actually fairly young. It's about 5 years old. And that really kind of mirrors the craft malting industry. It's a very young industry. And we don't have very many members who have been open, you know, between 5 or 10 years. So it's very young. It's very nascent, but it's also growing. So what the Guild does is we're an international trade association, and we're dedicated to promoting and educating people on the tradition of craft malting. It's, as you can tell by the name, mainly centered in North America, but we do have members across the world of all sizes and all types. And we also provide resources to our members. The craft maltsters are also very similar in their development to the way craft brewers were maybe 20, 30 years ago. I actually do have some craft maltsters who are using old dairy equipment that they've converted into malting the same way some of the old older craft brewers did when they first got started.
Yeah, I was kind of amazed. I had a I had a maltster on, you know, this was maybe a year ago or so. They were on from Maryland, and they were building all their own equipment, basically. They were building their own dryer and everything.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. And I can always tell when I walk into a malt house and the maltster there is or has been a home brewer, because there's very much that attitude of, you know, well, hell, I can build that. And so one of my maltsters, her equipment, she needed to have it fabricated. So she taught herself how to weld and made her own equipment that she needed. So with the resources that we're providing to craft maltsters, we do webinars, we have our quality and safety manual, and we also do our Malt Sensory Ambassador program, which helps train our members and the general public on how to identify malt flavors better and also how to communicate with each other about those kinds of flavors that they're looking for. So those are really the main things that the Guild does, is we're always looking to serve our members and our developing maltsters, as well as our maltsters in production, brewers, distillers, farmers, growers, academics, on really, you know, we're all in this together, and a rising tide can lift all boats. So trying to provide that education and resources so our maltsters can provide a quality and consistent product to brewers.
Well, I want to bring Jamie in here. Jamie, you're a professor at Montana State University involved in craft malting in Montana. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about craft malting and what's happening in your neck of the woods.
So we're seeing a very similar change. We may be a little bit behind the curve, but we're seeing this craft malt industry developing in Montana. So there is one large malt company, industrial-sized malt company in Montana. And then there are some others that contract with growers that aren't actually in the state, but they resource their barley. And so we're beginning to see some smaller actual craft maltsters develop. in this state. And it's following what Jen's saying about how it's developing in other parts of the country as well. And so it's a new opportunity. We have had a boom in the development in the craft brewing industry. And when I started in 2015, they were sourcing most of their materials, you know, from the bigger maltsters. And like we did a survey of the group and asked them, well, where are you getting your stuff from? And do you know what varieties you're using? That sort of thing. And, you know, they weren't that aware of where they were sourcing and what were the implications of that. And so as they've developed, then now they're starting to really want to source things locally. And so then that's supporting the development of the craft malt industry in Montana. And the really cool thing in Montana is that it is a place where we can get really good quality barley. And so a lot of that craft malt industry, as Jen already mentioned, is coming from actual growers. So they're, you know, they know exactly what their barley is, and then they're malting it, and then they can source it to the craft brewer. And so it's a total made in Montana product then. And so that's really exciting for us. And it's, you know, adding value. So if a grower is going to sell his grain to somebody else to malt, he doesn't get as much value out of it, excuse me, as if he was going to malt it, add some value into it, then he can sell it for more. So it's really important for that. And so then that's the way I play into that is the fact that I'm the barley breeder. And so I need to create better varieties for our growers and better varieties for our end users. And when I started, it seemed like one of the biggest hurdles for releasing a line was its quality. It was hard for us to get to the quality that we needed to release a good malt line. And we had released some lines for the bigger industry, for the adjunct brewers, but we really needed to improve our quality. And I felt like that our biggest stumbling block was that we didn't know what the quality was of the barley early enough in the breeding process. The breeding process is a very long process. It can take about 10 years from the initial cross to the release of the line. And so we needed to get in there and get some quality information as soon as we could, so we were sure to keep the high quality lines. I think we were just losing them. And so anyway, we have established, that was the initial impetus for creating the Malt Quality Lab, so we could actually provide data to ourselves to help us make those selections so we would keep the really good, high quality varieties. But then as part of that, the cool thing that's happened is because we can do the analysis, then we can provide a service to maltsters to actually help inform them. We've helped new developing malt companies analyze their malt. We help troubleshoot for them, help them refine their process. And then after they're up and running, then we can provide data quality to them so that they can tell the brewer, this is the actual quality of this material that you're receiving. And it's a big advantage to them because these smaller companies do not have the ability to run all the analysis, and we've got the analysis tools, and so we can do it for them. And so that's how that's all worked out.
So, Jen, the growth of the craft malting industry is really tied very closely to the craft beer revolution. How does the Guild work with craft brewers to find out what they need?
One of the main things we do as the Guild is really empower our maltsters and the sorts of information they can take to brewers. We do have brewers as members. So with our brewer members, we really just try to keep the dialogue open. A lot of times the Guild can act as a liaison between the brewers and the maltsters in case there may be some kind of uncomfortable conversation or, you know, feedback that they would like maltsters to know in general about their experiences with craft malt. So one of the things we do is with our education that we do for our members is we seek out and bring in experts on malting and on brewing to really educate all of our members on what are some of the best practices, what brewers are expecting to be able to use, how to talk to brewers about the ways that craft malt can maybe be handled differently if you're used to always using commodity malt. And then we also have our resources and tools that we give them to open up those that dialogue with brewers to really get into the flavor conversation and talk about what they're looking for. Because the great thing about craft maltsters is it is a highly collaborative group, and they can get in and work with brewers to, say, make a custom malt particularly for that brewer. So the way we do that is train them how to use methods such as the hot steep method in conjunction with the base malt flavor map to talk with the brewers and figure out exactly what sorts of flavors they're looking for. So if they say, I'm looking for a bready malt flavor, that's bread with a D, not Brettanomyces, but if they're looking for a bready flavor, they can say, okay, are you looking for Wonder Bread? Are you looking for lightly toasted bread crust? And really hone in on precisely those flavor profiles that the brewers would like. And then we also have our specialty malt flavor map will be coming out this month. And that's just going to help serve further the conversation with the brewers on developing those flavor profiles to help them create a very unique product. And then again, always encouraging communication. You know, if you're a craft brewer, you wouldn't want the consumer treating your beer like it's a, you know, a macro beer necessarily. And so if you've gone from using industrial commodity type malt to using craft malt, you don't treat that as the same ingredient either. There's a learning process with both. So just keeping the communication open and encouraging that between our maltsters and our brewers to give each other feedback is really one of the ways that the Guild works with brewers to deliver the product that they're looking for.
Yeah, I think I had Andrea Stanley was on
yes.
some time ago, and she was talking about sensory analysis. And I think they played a role in developing a flavor map that you're talking about, right?
Yes,
sensory map, yeah.
Yes, so she absolutely cool. did. Yeah.
Yeah, they talked in detail about that for about 45 minutes. It was great. Great session.
Yes. Yes, and the research going into malt flavor right now is so interesting across all, you know, the entire malting spectrum and everyone who's involved in it. It's very exciting right now to be in the malting industry and seeing the kind of the attention that's finally being paid to malt as a raw ingredient in beer. It's very cool.
Yeah. Not surprisingly, the craft maltsters are taking a big role in forging forward with sensory analysis, really.
That's yes, exactly. That's correct.
Yeah. See the new ASBC method for sensory analysis, for example, came out a couple
correct.
Years ago. Yeah.
Yes. And that has been fantastic. Even for me as a home brewer for several years, haven't experienced malt in that way until I started doing the hot steep method and even being able to try similar malts, you know, malt is going to look the same on a certificate of analysis or just even in the bin at your homebrew store, being able to do the hot steep on that and taste the huge differences that variety and terroir can make has just been amazing.
Well, Jamie, what are some of the unique features that craft breweries are looking for in barley and malt?
Well, I think the biggest thing that they're looking for is just uniqueness. So they would like that the unique flavors is, of course, a big focus. And we actually have because of that interest, we got support from them when we have a USDA grant that we're actually working with some colleagues at CSU to define chemically what those unique flavors are. They tend to, the craft brewers tend to think that the older varieties have more unique flavors and that we've lost some of those flavors through the breeding process. And so we're actually looking at that. We've collected over 300 old varieties and we've grown them in Montana. We've malted them, and then we're actually doing a chemical analysis, and the very first results show that there's large chemical differences in the malt just based on these different varieties. So we malted them all the same. So normally the way people get different flavors is by changing the malt process. And this is showing us that we can probably get different flavors just from the variety. And so we're approaching.
I was going to say, a lot of people don't know that there's really only a small number of varieties that are grown today, on a large scale, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very, very small number of varieties. And what you're talking about is resurrecting some of these heirloom varieties, right?
Well, resurrecting them, but also trying to identify what the unique flavor components are in those. And then maybe doing through breeding, getting them to be more adapted to Montana. So, for example, a lot of these varieties are from Europe, which is a very different climate than what we face here. And so we may not be able to use them to make malt here, locally grown. But if we can figure out what those flavor components are, then we can, you know, make the lines more adaptable to Montana, but with these good flavor components. So that's our ultimate goal. And so we feel like we're really excited because we see chemical differences. So then the next step is we've got to relate that to flavor differences that we can perceive, and then make sure that those flavor differences carry through to the actual final product. So we can taste differences in the wort, but once we brew them, are we going to still be able to taste them? So that's the whole grant, really, the whole process, a three-year study that we're doing to better understand flavor.
And how many different varieties are you working with right now? You said 300?
So in that study, there's 300. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's a big number.
Yeah, and of course we're going to narrow it down. In the first round, we've actually done the chemical analysis on 150, and we found 10 main chemical groups out of that 150. And so we're working on the second batch now, and so we'll see, do we see those same chemical groups or is it totally different stuff? So we'll see. We really don't know how diverse the chemistry is in the seed and how much of that will actually relate to flavor.
And Jen, on the other end of things, a lot of the craft maltsters are pushing the smaller growers, and they're some of the people that are really taking the lead in resurrecting some of these older varieties and actually growing them, right?
That's correct. And actually I can give you an example from here in North Carolina where I am. The past 2 years have been the first really successful years of having two-row winter malting barley grown in the Southeast, which is amazing. And we're just now starting to see our malt houses down here have a good supply of two-row malting barley that is regional for them. And that came about mostly from Riverbend Malt House approaching researchers and saying, we need a two-row malting barley in the Southeast. How can we make that happen? So they had Virginia Tech, North Carolina State University, UNC, all these universities start researching that. And, you know, now a few years later, we're starting to see the results of that. And that is a very similar story across the nation for our malt houses is creating this pull for this variety research. It is a publicly funded crop. So that is, as Jamie mentioned, there are luckily grants and resources available for these universities to be studying these and developing these barley traits, which is fantastic. And we're also always actively recruiting more growers into our guild just to, again, add their voice to the conversation. And we are providing our, agronomy information for our craft maltsters. For instance, we'll talk in a few minutes about the upcoming craft malt conference, but providing our maltsters again with the information they need to take to growers, because craft malt, calls for a barley product that a lot of farmers aren't familiar with or they haven't grown before. And it does have, like Jamie said, there are different needs for craft maltsters with the kinds of barley that they're growing. And so there is a lot of education for the growers and the maltsters and, of course, the researchers on what needs to be developed to make these craft malt products.
Interesting. So I guess you're working with a lot of local universities there as well to try and bring these things back to market.
Yes, yes, for sure. Like I said, we had had at our conference this past year in Asheville, we had several researchers from Virginia Tech come in, and one of the presentations was even entitled going from it won't work to yes, it will. And so it's being able to see now, as I said, that the craft malting industry is fairly young. And so being able to see this research starting to be successful and people like Jamie at Montana State doing all these flavor trials and variety trials is really, really an awesome thing for the industry.
Well, Jamie, could you tell us about some of the other research going on at Montana State University? I know you talked about one project, but have you got some other efforts going on as well to support craft malting?
Well, we have a complete breeding program, so we're always looking for new varieties that would work well in under our environmental conditions, and then we malt them and test them to make sure that they would how they would perform. And
do you have your own malt house there?
Yeah, we do. We malt everything in-house, and then we run the chemical testing as well. It's what you call a micro malter, mm-hmm. And we can run about, if we do full samples, we can run about 45 samples a week, and then run those tests as well.
That's very cool. So you mentioned you got a whole breeding program going on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So what we do is we decide a goal, a breeding goal. So for example, if we decided we wanted to improve quality for our craft maltster, or for growers, we want to improve, you know, yield and agronomics, or maybe there's a disease issue, or we've got some flavor genes that we know we want to put in. Well, we make a cross. We just make a control cross between two parents that have traits that we want. And then we derive lines from that cross over a couple of years, and then we test them. And then we decide if they're good or not. And the complete breeding process with all the testing that needs to happen and all the generations takes, up to 10 years before we can actually release a line. And so one of, you know, my jobs is really to try to figure out what's the next thing we really need to work on. And then identify the parents and make the crosses and then advance the lines and do the testing.
You're talking about crossbreeding the plants too, not necessarily genetically modifying. I know there's a big backlash now against GMOs, right?
Yeah, right now we don't do any genetically modified organisms. We're doing natural crosses. We're just using Mother Nature to just like you would, you know, breed a dog. We make a cross between two.
Pollinating the plants, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, appreciate that. Jen, what are some of the major challenges that craft maltsters run into when they're competing against these large malt houses?
I think the probably the most obvious challenge that they run into is the price differential. Craft malt is a premium product. It doesn't come from a commodity barley crop. It is more of a specialty crop. So price is usually one of the biggest things that comes up. We have also provided our members with PowerPoints and presentations on helping them understand the cost breakdowns in a brewery so they can have that conversation with the brewer, because it is something that in almost all cases will inevitably come up. One of the other bigger challenges is just getting the consistency and quality that a lot of brewers are used to using. When you're using a commodity or an industrial malt, they have the ability to blend several batches to, you know, meet those specifics. And that's just something that a lot of craft maltsters don't have the space or the capacity to do. So having that conversation with the brewer of the product, the batch might not be 100% consistent from batch to batch. And the quality is definitely there. When the craft malting industry was very, very young and they were doing the research into quality, flavorful malting barley varieties, wasn't quite there yet. There were issues with the quality, and again, with the maltsters really having to figure out the entire process for themselves and not having a lot of resources available to help them along. And now, luckily, we have that. And, you know, most of the quality issues are non-issues anymore. So that's been a fantastic evolution. And the same with the consistency. As the equipment is getting better, as people are getting their processes nailed down, so the information that's out there is more available and more holistic for them. The consistency is getting to, I hate to say it's getting to be more consistent, but it definitely is. So they're really being able to dial in their batches. So there's a very, very small variance between the, you know, from batch to batch.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine if you're working with homemade equipment, you're going to get some variation probably, right?
Right, exactly. And actually, equipment was the next challenge that I was going to say a sure. lot of the maltsters face. We're just now starting to see equipment more along the lines of a turnkey brewery coming onto the market. And for a lot of our maltsters, that equipment can still potentially be cost prohibitive. So it is still figuring out how to make the equipment they have currently, you know, get that dialed in and get that consistency and that quality from batch to batch.
Well, I understand you have the 2019 Craft Malt Conference coming up at the beginning of February. It's in Bozeman, Montana. What do you have planned?
So the 2019 Craft Malt Conference is the second year the Guild has done the conference. This past year, we were in Asheville. It moves geographically each year. I'm really, really excited about this year's conference. There's a lot of really great programming for aspiring and, you know, experienced maltsters, for brewers, for distillers, for growers. Since we're in Montana, and Montana is the second largest state for barley production, we do have a lot of research and presentations focused on barley and barley production, as well as featuring some of our members who have gone from growing, you know, contract or commodity barley to transitioning to craft barley for craft malt and opening their own craft malt houses. So we'll have that available for people. We also have a lot of really great featured speakers. We have Wayne Wombles, who's the head brewer of Cigar City Brewing. We have Fred Bultman of This Craft Nation. We have Dave Thomas, who's a malting legend, and several other people. In addition to that, we also have our first ever malt cup, which is going to be similar to the Cascade Cup for hops and is a flavor competition for malt houses to be able to enter. This year, we're doing a pale ale type malt that will undergo some analysis at MSU's Malt Quality Lab, and then we'll use the hot steam method to evaluate the flavor. And so we'll have awards for first, second, and third for our malt houses. And we're really excited about that, that the industry will finally have something similar to the Cascade Cup, some, you know, a quality mark that you can present to brewers and, you know, have a little medal and a trophy to be able to show off for your product. In addition to that, we also have our collaboration beers project. So what we did this year for beer for the conference, because our beer dinner is one of the bigger social events of the conference, is we paired 10 Montana state brewers with 10 craft maltsters from around the nation. And when I say around the nation, I truly mean around the nation. And they collaborated to brew a beer made with each maltster's craft malt that's going to be served at the conference. And the conference will be the only place that you'll be able to try all 10 of the beers. And then we'll also have tours of Jamie's Malt Quality Lab. We'll have tours of Glatton Valley Malt, which is one of our members up there just outside of Bozeman. And we'll also have some pre-conference workshops. So we have a lot of stuff this year for the conference.
Nice. And where can folks learn about, well, it's probably a little late for them to join this year's conference, but have you got a location pick for next year?
We do. We'll announce it at the conference this year.
Oh, it's top secret now.
Yes, huh? It is. It's top secret.
but they can find it on the Guild website, though, right? Right.
Correct. Right. It's craftmalting.com. It's definitely not too late to sign up. We still have some seats available for the conference.
Nice. And Jamie, I understand you're doing a presentation with Hannah Turner, I think, at the conference. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So Hannah is the quality lab manager. And so she's actually, if you send samples to be run at MSU, she's the one that handles all the samples and gets you your quality data. And so together we're going to tag team and try to give people an overview of what we do. She's also, they actually are also hosting a school about malt, and she's going to be one of the teachers for that class as well. So that's exciting for us. And I hope people will get a lot of learning from both the conference and the malt school.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Should be fun.
Good.
So, Jen, where can folks find out more about both the conference for next year as well as craft malting in general?
Our website for sure is craftmalting.com. If you go to the website, on the top of the page, you can navigate to the 2019 Craft Malt Conference page, and it's got information on the schedule, on all of our speakers, all of the really cool programs I just mentioned that we'll be doing there. And you can also sign up to receive updates on the conference on that page as well. And of course, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can follow us. We're at Craft Malting on each one of those.
Nice. Well, Jamie, you're doing a lot of work there out in Montana. What impact do you think craft malting is going to have on the craft beer industry here in the future?
Well, I think one of the interesting things that's happening is that the local movement is really becoming important. And so it's becoming really important. And in fact, there's actually some laws where they're saying that you get a tax advantage if you can say that a certain percentage of the stuff in your beer comes from or is locally sourced. And so there's some advantages to brewers financially to locally source. And so then that's going to help support the market for craft maltsters and then for growers too. And so I just see it as a big economic advantage. Looking from the grower's point of view, which is oftentimes what I'm doing because I'm talking to growers a lot, it helps diversify their market. So if there's only one or two people that want to buy your malt, then you're sort of at their beck and call. And if they have too much barley one year, then maybe they'll cancel your contract. So to have more places to sell, more people to interact with, is just going to stabilize really make their projects more sustainable.
And are you seeing really a lot? Important. Are you seeing a lot of craft breweries taking interest in you know locally grown barley malt?
Oh, definitely. And so the group that Jen mentioned, Gallatin Malt, it's a grower in town close by. He produces all of his own barley, and he is building relationships directly with craft brewers, and he's providing them. And the other cool thing about this, and Jen mentioned this, is that they can tailor make their malt to the brewer's specifications because it's an advantage that craft maltsters have. Because they make smaller batches, then they can tailor each batch, and so it's a new thing for brewers. You know, small brewers are used to kind of getting whatever malt they get, but they can work directly with a craft maltster and get a very specific product that will help them make their unique brews. And we know that, you know, the craft brewing industry, the important thing about it is that these unique products, that people are interested in trying new things. And so the having the different barley varieties, having unique malts, all of that builds into that business model of making unique brews. And so it's exciting.
Yeah, I had a group on last episode, actually, that were growing wet hops in Arizona in greenhouses. It was kind of insane. And wow. But they're selling in small batches actually to homebrewers, which I thought was selling wet hops right to the homebrewers, which I thought was really kind of interesting. I mean, do you see an opportunity perhaps for homebrewers to get involved in the craft malting as well?
Well, of course, there would be a way to source for homebrewers as well. I don't know any specifics of a maltster. Jen may be able to answer that, actually targeting that market. But sure, that's an opportunity.
Well, I just think it's kind of neat. Homebrewers in particular can afford the premium if they're only making, you know, 5 or 10 gallons of beer. To get into the craft malting. Jen, do you want to comment on that, maybe?
Definitely. So as a homebrewer, when I came into the guild, that was a big question of mine, really, was where can I get all of these malts that I've been talking to these maltsters about? So on our website, we do actually have a homebrewers craft malt resources page. It's under the craft malt tab on the title bar. And what I've done is asked our members, if you sell directly to homebrewers, if you supply homebrew shops, please let me know so I can get these shops added. So if you are a homebrewer interested in purchasing some of the craft malt and working with it, you can go to that page. And I would also encourage anyone who's interested to use our craft malt finder and reach out to a maltster near them. I haven't heard of a maltster yet who doesn't work with homebrewers. And like you said, they can definitely absorb that price point a little bit better. And they're also great resources for maltsters because you, as a homebrewer, I am a little more willing to take a risk on using craft malt and giving my feedback to the maltster on what my experience was. And they can use that to tailor it better to craft brewers. So I think, homebrewers, there's definitely a spot for them in the craft malt movement to get involved and to just help the maltsters open that dialogue a little bit better with pro brewers.
And you're obviously director of the guild, or I should say, let's see, you're executive director. Anyways, can you comment on where you think things are going for the industry as a whole?
I think it's really going to continue to grow and expand. Of course, I won't see the astronomical rise that craft beer has seen over the past few years. But I think in an increasingly competitive craft beer market, as we're seeing, it's starting to slow down a little bit. I certainly don't believe that it's a bubble. But as we're seeing brewers feel a little bit more pressure to differentiate themselves, a lot of them are turning to using quality craft ingredients, and that's all raw ingredients, for their beers because that's what's going to be able to differentiate them, in an increasingly crowded marketplace. And they're also able to create beer with very unique regional characteristics. And the conversation about what craft means or what local means, it means different things to different people. So if somebody's interested in creating a great local ingredient, they can find that in a craft maltster. If they're looking for that unique flavor, they can also find that with a craft maltster. And if you're somebody who is really wanting to focus on local terroir, you've probably got a craft maltster near you who can help you with that. And again, I mean, I really can't stress enough just how collaborative the environment is with craft maltsters and brewers, because like Jamie said, a lot of them have been used to getting whatever malt that they can get. And now you can call up a craft maltster and say, I had a dream about this malt that existed, and they can work with you to help make that a reality. And I've seen that in process, going into malt houses and having them say, this is a fresh batch of caramelized triticale that I made for one brewer who wanted to see what it tastes like. He had an idea for a beer. And so we talked about it and figured out the process, and I'll be delivering this batch. And that was a customized malt just for this brewer. So really, I mean, the collaboration is huge, and beer drinkers are getting increasingly savvy, and they'll be able to recognize those differences in the beer flavor and appreciate the flavor those craft malts bring to the beer.
Yeah, I can certainly see the appeal of it. Some of my favorite tap rooms are the ones where you go in and they've got something different on tap all the time.
Yes.
Because they're brewing multiple times a week and they're constantly making different beers. And I can see where, certainly a locally made beer, locally sourced beer would be very attractive. So really nice.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Do you have any closing thoughts? Let's start with you, Jen.
Sure. I would say if you're interested in learning more about craft malt, please visit our website. Please reach out. We like to be responsive. Of course, maltsters are going to love to talk about their product. I can definitely help connect people. If you're not sure geographically where you've got a maltster near you, I can certainly help with that. And I would say, keep trying and keep those lines of communication open with craft malt and learn more about it and understand it's not the same malt that you've always used. And of course, like I said, the registration is, we still have some seats open for the Craft Malt Conference. We would love for you to join us in Bozeman. You can definitely follow along on social media to see where we're going to be next year. It's going to be an equally cool spot. So with that, I would just say thank you again for giving us this platform today to be able to talk about craft malting and how the industry is really growing and evolving. It's very exciting.
My pleasure. And Jamie, your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I would say if anybody is interested in learning more about malt quality analysis, they could go to our website. It's in the montana.edu site. If you just go barley breeding Montana, you'll come up with it. So we welcome any inquiries about that. And if you want to learn more about it, the conference coming up is a good place to learn more about malt and how that works. And so we look forward to seeing everybody.
I forgot to mention, you have a website somewhere, or can I find it through Montana State?
Yeah. If you just go Montana barley breeding, you'll come up with our website, and then look for the tab for quality, malt quality, and then you can learn more about malt quality. We have some educational stuff there, just how we do the malt quality analysis. And it's informative for people that are working in malt, or if you're a brewer and you want to know more about how malt is made, you could go there and learn some stuff about it.
Well, thank you again for coming on the show, Jamie. Really appreciate it.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
And you as well, Jen. Great to have you both first-time guests on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And my guests today were Dr. Jamie Sherman. She is a barley breeder at Montana State University. And also Jen Blair, who's executive director at the North American Craft Maltsters Guild. A pleasure having you both. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, a big thank you to Jen Blair and Jamie Sherman for joining me this week. Thanks also to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top craft brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's the podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at beerandbrewing.com/podcasts. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the innovative new Riptide Pump. Designed for homebrewers, this pump features a whisper quiet sealed housing, a removal tri-clamp stainless steel head that's easy to clean, and a built-in relief valve for easy priming. Get the Riptide Pump today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith 3 is available for download on both desktop and mobile platforms. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider support, new whirlpool hop options, support for high-altitude brewing, and a whole lot more. Check out Beersmith 3 and get your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.